Om Shanti, good evening everyone. And welcome back, Sister Chanti. We are really lucky that we can have Sister Chanti for a second session tonight. And it will be a topic that is, I think, very, very dear to all of us. Something that should be the easiest of the world, but sometimes it seems to be the hardest, loving myself. And so we have great hopes in Sister Chanti that she can give us some very good guidance here. And afterwards, we will have meditation from 7 to 7:30.
Om Shanti. It's a topic that's close to my heart because it's one that I had to practice myself. Why? Because in the world out there, everybody thinks that loving the self is selfish. Like this morning we talked about giving time to the self. Again, the world out there sees that as selfishness. In the same way, because everything is based on external things, they would say that this is also selfishness. But yet, in fact, there's a commandment that all of you are aware of. And the commandment says, love thy neighbor as you would love yourself. And I look at the state of the world, not just Israel and Palestine. That's, of course, headlines at the moment. But India, Britain, America, anywhere in the world, Australia also probably the same. We don't know how to love ourselves. And this is why we don't know how to love our neighbors. The same principle as we were talking about this morning. Whatever's going on inside is what we project outside. And so the solution, we always try to find solutions out there. We see the problems of the world and we say, try this, try this, try this. But in fact, the problem is in here. And so the solution is in here. And only God gives us the real method to be able to resolve the solution and sort it out inside. Then things can start changing outside also. And so loving the self, having compassion for the self, having value for the self, having respect and regard for the self, starts inside. And there are very simple thoughts that can create this, but they slip away very quickly, and we have to keep reminding ourselves of this. One is that within my own inner being, I have all the highest qualities that are there innate within me. The body is made up of proteins and carbohydrates and all the things that science can tell us about. But science hasn't been able to tell us what consciousness really is. They're getting there slowly, slowly, and I'm sure that in a little while they'll finally agree. But some scientists are coming to the conclusion that consciousness is separate to the brain, but it's still a little bit way to go for mainstream science to accept that. But those of us who've experimented with these ideas, we know for sure that brain and body are one thing, and I, the soul, and consciousness are separate. And so what is consciousness made up of? The ingredients that make up this tiny little point of light that I am, a peace, love, truth, purity, and joy. These are my own innate qualities. I have them inside of me. But of course, when I'm not connected with myself, I'm looking for them outside. And this is where all the problems begin. I want someone to love me. But instead, if I go inside and go beyond all the dust and accumulation of stuff, and I go deeper and deeper, I connect with the peace, I connect with the love. Short story, many years ago, myself and a group of other young sisters, we all must have been about 19, 20, 21, around that age group. Daddy Janki was unwell, but even though the body was unwell, she wanted us to experience the highest spirituality. So we would go to her in the morning after the Murali class, and she would ask us, what did you take from the Murali? And it would underline it for us. And we paid more attention to the Murali because we knew she would be asking us. So that was very good. And at night, she would ask us how our day had been. And our day would have been engaged in karma yoga, action, because we were there for training. So we served in the different departments. Madhuban was very small, but it was an intimate family. And one evening, one of the sisters said that she had a very hard time, and it was because she felt that nobody loved her. And Daddy said to her, have you tried giving love? The next evening, Daddy looked around and said, who would like to share? And she shared, Daddy, it's been beautiful. I felt love coming to me from everyone. And of course the change was because she was giving love to all. So the response came back from everyone accordingly. And so what I put out is what comes back to me. And so I'm thirsty for love and I'm looking, but I don't find it. Or if I find it, it's short-lived. But if I go inside and connect with the source and I give, it's multiplied and it comes back to me. But the same with peace, with truth, with happiness. You're happy inside, you smile at somebody. Sooner or later, they'll smile back at you. Again, little short story. In the 80s, I was in London. My father was in India with my mother. He'd retired and so he'd gone back. So maybe it was the 90s by then, because they went back to India in 86. So this would have been early 90s. And got a message that he's in ICU and very critical. So Daddy said, go immediately. And within a few hours, I was on the flight to Pune. It meant coming to Bombay, changing, going to Pune. And I was hoping I'd get there in time. I got there in good time. And he was really very, very critical. But somehow he recovered and he had many years after that. But while he was then from ICU, he got transferred to the ward and his own room. And I was there every day. I was there for him for 10 days, so I didn't have any other things to do, just to be there. And so when the nurses and doctors would come, I'd be outside in the corridor. And I'd be watching the faces of the people. And within a day, I could see that many of them were the same people. Visitors coming for patients, relatives, doctors and nurses doing their rounds. But nobody had a smile on their face. They were frowning or anxious or fearful or busy. So I decided to experiment. And I started to very consciously smile at each one. They'd walk past, then they'd look back. It was as if like it was unreal. They were looking back to see, was it real? And the next day, I did the same. And now the majority of them started to smile back. The third day, even those who hadn't smiled the day before, they started to smile back. And so I could see that not even a word, just a smile, but a genuine smile, because you're with Baba, you're sending out those vibrations, and they can see you don't want anything from them. So, and it's a, in a way, a safe environment. They know who you are, where you are, why you're there. So, and the white sari, I think, helped also. But really, within 3 days, everybody was smiling. And so, whatever's in your heart reaches out and touches others, and it comes back to you. And so when you really connect with yourself deep inside, and you rediscover the values that you have within yourself, you can start loving yourself. And there's a song, and I don't remember the rest of the song, but there's a line that always sticks with me, and it says, "No one can snatch my dignity away from me." It's a very lovely song. As I say, I've forgotten the rest of the words. But this one line, if I'm stable in my own state of valuing myself, respecting myself, loving myself, because of the qualities I have inside, not because the physical form is strong and young and beautiful and it isn't and whatever it is, not because I have a bank account or a good position. All those things come and go, come and go. And there'll always be others who are better than you. And so then you feel inferior. And there'll always be someone who's less than you. Then you feel superior. And you fluctuate between the two, the superiority complex and the inferiority. But when you go inside and you see your own qualities, which are your eternal qualities, they are yours, and you connect with those, then there's a dignity that you have that truly nobody else can take away from you, and you can begin to love yourself. So when you wake up in the morning, and your eyes are sort of going like this, and you're still not quite together, and you're brushing your teeth, look here in the mirror and see the shining star and connect with yourself. And then, of course, starting the day with meditation means that that foundation of self-respect and self-love is there with you, to stay with you through the day. That's one. And the second is, when people used to say to Daddy, "What's my role? I don't know what my role is. I don't know what I should be doing." Daddy used to say, "The highest role that you can ever have at any time in existence through the whole cycle is that now you know you're a child of God. That is your highest role. Just simply to remember you have been created in the image of the divine," which is what your scriptures tell you anyway, that you were created in that eternal image. And so as a child of God, that is truly the highest role. And again, no need for competition, no need for comparison. This is who you are, full stop. And you just have to maintain the awareness of that. And you can love yourself in a very beautiful way just through this awareness. And when you look at others, you see them also as that shining star, and love them and respect them and value them. Can you imagine how the world could change just simply through this awareness of knowing who I am and seeing the others with that same vision? Truly, it's world transformative. And all it needs is all of us who are here to keep this consciousness and come to that state where I hold that awareness and I carry it away with myself from this room, first experimenting outside here, but also taking it back with you, wherever it is you've come from, starting right at the airport, and even if there's problems with the ticket, with the bookings, with the luggage, whatever it is, you keep holding that vision. And then you carry it back to your home. It can truly transform everyone. Sometimes we wonder, how is it possible for the world to change? But it really needs just a certain minority to reach a high level of consciousness, and the minority can change the majority, and together we create a better world. And this is the one consciousness that can transform everything. And so far I've just been talking a lot about the soul, but of course it's help from above that has given us this understanding in a very deep way, because we've read these statements in our scriptures, but we haven't managed to practice it. And that's because we haven't fully comprehended what all this is about. How am I, the soul, different to the body? That's never been explained to us. And Baba's now giving us a detail of all of that. And of course, one moment I'm here, the next moment I'm here. My eye sees something and I get distracted. Or I hear something and again I get distracted. But to hold this awareness of who I truly am, then that is the effort that I need to make. The knowledge of the soul is so powerful that for me it was transformative. The first day that I heard the detail of this knowledge of who I am, most of my questions were answered. And then I didn't have to practice it. It was just there so powerfully in my awareness that as I walked back from the center to my grandmother's home, which is where I was staying at that time, about 15 minutes walk, I got home and I couldn't remember. How did I come from there to here? I couldn't remember how I'd gone through the street and whoever and whatever. It felt as if I'd just flown home, because I was just so amazed by this awareness of who I am. And so this morning when there was a question, first it was easy, then later it's become difficult. Now I have to remind myself, I'm a soul. At that time the idea was so amazing that I couldn't forget it. It was just with me all the time. And not just for one day, but it stayed with me a long time. And I used to think, you know, give me a year and I can become complete. Today, it's taken me 50 plus years and I'm not yet complete. But that was my ego speaking. Because when I go deeper and deeper and deeper into the self, then I realize how much stuff I've accumulated and how I now need to do more and more yoga and understand myself more and more deeply, but still continue to love myself. You see all the weaknesses, you see all the stains, you see all the marks, but it's okay. Deep down, there is that original purity. You know, when there's gold, you have to put it into the fire, and it has to be very high temperature fire to remove all the rubbish that's been accumulated in it. Have you seen gold being transformed? Daddy and I were in South Africa, and Daddy she never used to go to see tourist sites or anything. But when they told her that there were gold mines, and they asked her, do you want to see the gold mine? She was fascinated, and she's a daughter of a jeweler in physical terms. And so that had been, of course, years ago, but she said, yes, take me there. And so they took us deep down into the mines, and you could see, you know, the stone and the strand of gold there. You could see it actually. But of course they weren't extracting at that time. It's just become a sort of place that you can visit, that you can really go deep. And then they brought you up, and then they showed you how the fire and the ingots of gold were being created, and she was fascinated. And so all the alloy being removed through God's love and the fire of yoga, and everything that's been accumulated, all the rubbish coming out, but what's left then is the pure gold. And so the gold is there, but it's become a bit mixed. And so I need to have yoga. But through that whole process, A, I have to trust the jeweler. And I know that the jeweler knows what his job is. And he knows how to carry me through the process. You see, when there's gold that's with alloy, when you put it into jewelry, it's still beautiful. And it looks lovely. But the jeweler knows that it's not real. And the person who owns the jewelry also knows that it's only 14 carat, it's not 24 carat. And then when the gold is going through the process, you can't use it. It looks like, well, it's just molten. So you can't have a jewelry from just that. But the jeweler knows what he's doing. And in this case, we have to trust the process. I know that at the end of the process, again, there will be that beautiful jewelry, but it will be real, not artificial anymore. And so A, I have to trust the jeweler. And even though there will be times when I don't like myself, because it feels as if, you know, I'm seeing all these defects, I'm seeing all these weaknesses, it's okay, it's okay. All the rubbish is coming out, all the alloy is going away. The trust. And secondly, trust yourself. Have faith in yourself. Not just love the self, but have faith in yourself. That yes, out of this process, what's going to come out is absolutely the purest form of you. So yes, it's true. At the moment, in the process of transformation, it's not very beautiful. All the stuff is coming out. But at the end of the day, yes, trusting the jeweler, trusting yourself, and what's going to be there is the pure original soul, the golden soul. And so the journey of purification is not so easy, but trust the process and trust the one who's in charge of the process and trust yourself. And so loving yourself is a journey. Doesn't happen overnight. Yes, the click happens overnight. There's a sudden realization, the light comes flashing on. But then to keep the light on, that's the energy, that's the effort, the attention that I have to give to myself. We've just had the festival of Diwali here in Bharat, in India. And they have the little lamps. Now they have the artificial lamps, which are battery operated, so there's no risk of fire. But that's today. But normally you would have those little earthenware lamps, and it would need oil being poured in every night to make sure that the flame stays. And so this little flame of mine has been ignited, but I need to pour in the oil of spiritual knowledge every single day. And I have to give it that attention, that all the storms that come my way, the doubts, the questions, the circumstances, the situations and people and everything, well, all these things are coming to blow out this flame. But I have to continue to trust myself and keep the flame burning, shining brightly. And it's going to guide me to my destination with the protection and the help from above. So when challenges come, and of course they're going to come, do you ever reach a state of completion without having gone through challenges? In your career, if you didn't have the obstacles and the hurdles, how would you have gained experience? How would you have been able to move on to the next level? But your maturity has come, your experience has come, and your development has come through all the challenges you've had to face. Who believes that? No one. No one? Only one? You've never had challenges? Yes, you had challenges all the time. But it's through those challenges that you stepped up. Right? And when the challenges came, you thought, how am I going to deal with this? And then somehow you stabilized yourself. Maybe you had a good friend, maybe you had a good mentor who helped you through all of that. Maybe you just relied on God alone. But somehow you got through those challenges. You know, I've earned every gray hair that I have. So I'm not worried about my age. I don't remember my age, actually. Through the day, I don't think I'm nearly 75. I just keep going. And I don't worry about the wrinkles or anything, because I'm the shining star. And I focus on that. But when I look back on my journey, and most of the obstacles have been because of things going on inside, a few things outside, but more it's inside. And then, of course, they become things that you're dealing with outside. But it wasn't really outside. It was inside. And then things happened outside. But through everything that's happened, I've grown. I've matured. And I wouldn't want to be 20 again. I wouldn't want to be 50 again. I'm glad that whatever it is I've been through has added to my experience, and today I can keep smiling. I've just been in a situation in which this morning I was dealing with about 100 people here in this room, and quite unexpectedly a few people started speaking, and I was a bit surprised. But it was okay. I was able to stay very cool. And then after the session here at 11:30, I spoke to one of the sisters who's a resident here. And I said, can we bring together the heads of department at 4 o'clock? And she said, yes, of course. And so that was then a group of about 40. And the meeting started, and it was spiritual, and then people started talking and lots of things came out, because we're going through a new chapter, because a sister who used to be here passed away just a month ago. Some of you know her, Dr. Nirmala. Who knew her? Jessica knew her very well. Some of you others knew her very well. So a very lovely person, very powerful person. So she passed away, and of course there's a big vacuum left that has to be filled. Physically there are other people who can fill the vacuum, but spiritually and emotionally it's a whole different story. So I was meeting with the group of about 40 different department heads, and a person came up with an idea about halfway through the meeting. I said, great idea. Okay, so we ran with the idea, and God's magic. By the end of the meeting, everyone in that room was very content and very hopeful. And I thought to myself, God's magic is working here. Really, all you have to do is to stay cool and you'll see God's magic work. And yes, when there's respect for the self and respect for others and a willingness to listen to others, then the energy flows and things happen in a way that this morning it would have been impossible to think that things could have developed in the way they did within the space of just some hours. Really, that's today's experience. And so it's really beautiful to see how, yes, as I say, whatever the obstacles that have come, you learn from those, you grow from those. And so gradually God removes all the alloy so that then you're moving forward to the state where it is only those original qualities that have emerged, and you're using those qualities in your life, and you're expressing those in everything that you do. And so loving yourself is a journey, but with God's help, and you keep holding God's hand of truth, and you get there. Ups and downs will come, but it's okay. You know that you have to keep your vision focused on your destination, and with God's help, you get there. The lovely thing about meeting this group is that all of you believe in God. Am I right? When I'm speaking to a group from Northern Europe, it's a very different situation. All right, Matthias? There'll be 25% of people, small group, big group, usually it's about 25% who don't believe in God at all. And then there'll be another 25% who are not quite sure. And even the 50% who are sure are hesitant to speak about it because everybody else is allergic. But meeting all of you, and I can talk about God very freely and openly. So your love for God, faith in God is beautiful to observe. But of course, your faith in God means that the power and strength that you can get from that is something that leads you to personal victory, but not just your own personal victory, collectively also. The power of your faith can empower others around you. You know how fear is infectious, and fear comes from insecurity, and that's part of the whole process of lack of understanding who I am. And so the journey of not just knowing I'm a soul, but understanding deeply what is there within I, the inner being, I, the soul. And God removes all your fear. You know, they say, it's an expression I heard a long time ago, the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is fear. And it sounds interesting. But when you start loving yourself deeply, you realize how the love removes all the fears because it's removing all the insecurities that you had. And so it's very true. Love removes fear. And so your love for yourself and your love for others can help remove the fear of others also. And it's not just in terms of fear, or fear of neighbor, in terms of different color, different religion, different tradition, different culture, different food, different. But it's also because of the environment, nature, what we've done to nature. You know, there's a word that they use certainly a lot in the UK now, climate anxiety. There are psychiatrists who deal specifically with the subject, and so our team of people who work on climate change subjects have been having meetings with the psychiatrists and the people in psychology who deal with climate anxiety to see how we can develop workshops for young people, especially. Young people don't want to have children because they're scared of what's going to happen in the future in terms of climate change and the planet. You know, so that's how extreme it is. So my point is that the more I love myself and I experience God's love, I'm liberated from fear. but I'm able to help others around me also overcome fear. So where fear was infectious, love can replace it and also be infectious. So we can help others also with that. But also our vision of others in your own home, children, and give them love and help them overcome their fears, whether it's fear of being bullied at school, whether it's fear of what's going to happen to the future, to them and the planet, all sorts of fears. But love and the power of love can help them overcome their fears. If you make a list of fears, it's such a long, 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 long one. Everybody has some form of fear or another. But trying to deal with all those fears one by one by one by one, it's a headache. But try the other way. Go deeper and deeper into yourself and find the love and the truth and joy that's there within. And you won't have to worry. Really, your love will also take away your worry, your anxiety, because the fear has gone. You know, there was a survey at one point that I was aware of, and that was through one of the national papers in the UK. And the question was, how many of your fears actually were unfounded? They didn't have a reality. And you discovered later on that you spend hours and days worrying about something that never materialized. And you know what the result was? About 80% of the people asked said that the fears they had actually never happened. And yes, 20% said that yes, their fears of serious illness or fears of the worst things happening did happen. But 80% of them said that all the things they'd been afraid of didn't actually happen. And so today, when I love myself and I do what is right today, then I'm planting the seeds for a future which is going to be right. Because the logic of as you sow, so shall you reap is incontestable. It is a reality. And we don't always want to accept that or believe it, but it's true. My thoughts, my words, my actions today, based on love and truth, what's my future? I have nothing to be afraid of. And yes, up until now, there are mistakes I've made. That's also a reality. But if I can forgive whoever it is who sinned against me, but also if I can learn to forgive myself, and yes, realize, and through realization change, then with God's love, I can also settle that karma so that I'm not afraid of the past and what the repercussions of the past are going to be. Otherwise, there's always a slight fear. Well, I did this. What's going to be the outcome? What's going to be the result? But let me learn to forgive myself through realization and reformation. If I haven't realized, then the fear is going to stay. But if I've realized what was my role in whatever, and I've forgiven myself through change, then I've settled that with God's love and the power of yoga. And for the future, again, the power of love, and I do what is right, I don't need to be afraid. I know that the future is going to be very beautiful. There was another very interesting question that had come up many years ago. This morning we were talking about balance, and one of the things about balance that, especially in terms of children and discipline and everything, or whether it's teachers or whether it's employers at work, it's a question that comes up in life in different ways. But the question essentially is, well, what is the balance between love and law? what is right, what is accurate, what is discipline. So how would you sort that out? And then the answer that we were given was, yes, you do have to think about discipline and balance and everything, but more than anything is the power of love. You can teach somebody discipline, and maybe in front of you they'll listen, but then your back is turned, and you know the tail of the dog? You put it in a tube, and it's straight. You'd remove the tube, and it goes back again. So if it's only discipline, it'll go back again when you're not there anymore. But when there's love, then the change that happens is from realization and from the heart. And so the answer we were given was, it's always love that's more important than the law. And so through the power of love, the transformation for the self and the transformation in the world happens beautifully. When we talk about a better world, then one of the big things that's always talked about is a world of love. You know, we ran a project, and I know that Arunaben was involved. I'm not sure about Sonaben and Matthias. Maybe you were, or Anusuben. This was at the end of the 80s, 88. 88 through to 91. So the question that we put to people was, how do you see a better world? And the second question was, how do you see relationships in that better world? And the third question was, how do you see yourself in the better world? And we only had centers in about 66 countries at that point. But the project reached 129 countries. And that was all the countries in the world at that time that had a population of over 1 million. The world map has changed since then, and now there's like 200 countries, something like that, like one Yugoslavia split into five. Imagine, one country split into five. But same thing many places across the world, so now it's changed. But at that time, 129 countries participated. And it took us 6 months for 40 people to go through all the entries and see what's actually coming out. And we thought, you know, people would come up with brilliant scientific ideas of how to create a better world. There were a few things like that, but not so many. But you know what everybody talked about? They talked about values. A world of happiness, a world of love, a world of honesty, a world of trust. They talked about the universal qualities. And essentially, it was these five qualities that are the inherent qualities of the soul. Peace and love and truth and joy and purity. And so that is the better world. And so how can you make love happen in the world? When those who have this awareness emerge it within their own consciousness and get rid of all the other stuff, that's the journey. Getting rid of all the other stuff. Finding the love is easy. But getting rid of all the stuff that gets in the way is the attention and effort. And so clear out all the other stuff and it's there. And then you have to express it. And as you express it through your thoughts, your words, your actions, a better world is created. So it's not by bigger houses or better cars or anything like that. It's these qualities that are there inherent. So we have a few minutes if you have any questions, and then we'll go into meditation.
Sajjan, yeah, I have a question. You used different names for God and also Baba. Can you elaborate on that? Why do you call God Baba? So that our friends can understand that more.
Why do I call God
Baba?
Ah, sorry.
Because not all our friends might be familiar with that.
Sure. When I say God, I'm talking about the being of light, the Supreme. But for me, when I started to meditate and I heard that I have to think about the different qualities of God, 99 names of God are all the different qualities of God. So experiment with thinking about God through all the different qualities of God. But when you start experiencing God's love, then you start feeling a very intimate connection of mother, of father, of friend, of teacher, of guide, and something that the mystics of every tradition have shared. In deep experiences of God's love, they've spoken of God as the Beloved. And so in meditation, when I experience God and there's that sense of closeness, then I use the word Baba, Father. But also, of course, Mother and Father. More about this word Baba later. It's more complicated than just this. But as a starter, Baba means Father. And so just thinking about God as Mother and Father, but especially Father, because there's a sense of protection, there's a sense of property, inheritance, and the inheritance that God gives to me is that of happiness and the gift, the inheritance of all the qualities that he has, she has. God is this being of light. And only when I'm in this awareness of I'm not this, male or female, but I am this being of light. So first step to have this awareness, I am not this, I am light. Then in that awareness I connect with the divine, the being of light. But it's an intimate relationship. It's not God far away somewhere up there. But it's absolutely a personal connection. And some people are scared of this personal connection because there's a sense of responsibility that comes in. Because the parent will look after the child, but the child also has a responsibility of obedience, of trust, a return of that care and love that I receive. And so that's a bit scary, that I carry a responsibility of obedience. And so it's easier to think about God as just far away and somewhere out there, but no, a personal relationship. And so Baba is very close and personal. And to think about the Creator is also different to thinking about my parent, my father, my mother, with whom I have a close connection, and it's a two-way relationship. Creator and the Creator created me, I don't know when, and the Creator created me and he's up there and I'm down here. So again, it's a bit far, but Baba makes it very close. So yes, I do use the word Baba. And I think it's because I was aware that many of you have been through the initial meditation course. Is there anyone who hasn't been through that initial course of the 7 days lessons? Okay, so this is what I thought. So I use this word Baba. It's closer to me than God.
Thank you, Sister Jayanti. You touched on fear, and I wanted to ask you, what's your advice to people, because you used two examples that I can relate to. One about young children having, or young people having a fear of having children, because we don't know what the future of the world looks like. And the second is those who have a fear of illnesses, getting sick, you know, and constantly thinking about that. And then, of course, the point on the more you think about something, the more you dwell on it, the more you attract it, and the more likely those fears can manifest into reality. So what's your advice to people who are held back by their fears?
Very important, because yes, in terms of climate anxiety and the fear of that, I believe that through my awareness of soul being eternal and my faith in God also being eternal, my understanding is that nature is also eternal. So yes, what's ahead of us is a huge upheaval because of all the things we've done to nature and created a total imbalance. But all the upheaval of nature is actually a way of restoring balance back into the world. And it's only our trust and our experience of soul being eternal and the relationship with the divine that's going to carry us through this transition. And so at our in the presence we have at climate change conferences since 2009, I think what we're offering is hope for the future rather than fear or anxiety. And the fact that it's our consciousness that actually has made the climate the way it is, breakdown, but our consciousness can heal the planet and bring the planet back into a state of perfect balance. So that's one side. The other side, in terms of health, some people would say that in terms of illness, psychosomatic illness is a reality, and different people would put different percentages. People who are working in holistic health would say that maybe 80%, 90% is a psyche impacting the soma, and maybe allopathic practitioners would say it's only 20%, 80% is genetic and whatever. But in fact, even genetic behavior of the body, you express genes or suppress genes through consciousness. And the person to read about there is Dr. Bruce Lipton. And really, the amount of material he's written and the videos he's produced is incredible. But and he started as a non-believer. No believer in consciousness or the power of consciousness, no believer in God. And I don't know whether he's now a theist. I met him about 10 years ago now. But at the time I met him, he wasn't a believer in God, but he was definitely a believer in consciousness being the power that drives everything in life. So there are other people also who believe the same, but this is a person who I know has written a lot and spoken a lot about this. So my thoughts about illness and my fear of illness is more likely to create illness than anything. And when I trust that I'm a soul and I am responsible for the quality of my thoughts and my feelings, my intentions and my attitude, that changes things a lot. And I know that nowadays there are a lot of people thinking about the attitude of gratitude. And so to be grateful for what I have rather than be afraid is very important. And definitely that can change the balance. And what I've seen with all the dadis, not just Dadi Janki. Dadi Janki lived to be 104. And she's had illnesses like double pneumonia, tuberculosis, heart issues, paralysis, you name it, and she's been through it. But through all those illnesses, she would always be available to give guidance, to give support, to cheer you up if you needed that. You didn't go to cheer her up as a patient, but she gave you a powerful sense of her own wisdom that uplifted you. So The body is settling whatever it is, but the soul can remain detached and really stay with God and continue to serve through the mind, through words, and simply through your behavior. Shall we fly? Okay. I won't do a commentary this time. Is that okay? Let's be in silence and just focus on three things: the original qualities of the soul, the relationship with the divine, and the home of light. A world of light, a world of purity, a world of peace, which is the original home of the soul. It's been lovely to meet you all, and all good wishes for the rest of your retreat. There's many, many more treasures waiting for you, and I hope to see you again in the future somewhere. Om Shanti.